Welcome to another edition of Broadway Babies. I'm Stephanie Anderson.
And I'm Noelle Hannibal.
All right. And today's guest, we have Ben Bankhauser. I'm so excited about this. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being
here. Well, welcome, welcome. Huge, huge fan of your voice.
You too.
Of course.
Oh, thank you.
You and your voice. Your voice, to me, is like butter.
Oh.
Butter. Like smooth, like butter. Fantastic.
I love that.
Not light margarine. Butter.
No, it's not margarine.
The real thing. It's got to be the real thing.
It is the bona fide 100. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Fantastic. Just smooth it on some muffins. Just yes. Yes.
Thank you. I love that.
Yes. And when I found out that they'd actually done a filming of the staged musical version of Newsies, I was like, yes, because long story short, used to work in children's theater, had a director, he's the artistic director, and when we all saw the movie, he's like, this has got to be a musical. Like, this should be staged. He was totally right. And then flash forward, here we are.
Here we are.
So, yeah, here we are. And so that was my first time listening or hearing your voice, and I'm just like, oh God, can we sing some more? Just sing a little bit more.
Yeah, because as Lance brought up, Ben didn't have his own song in Newsies, which is
a crime.
No, he did not. And that is a doggone shame.
So rude.
It's rude. It is. It's just rude.
I did all I could. I was like, come on, folks, but they were like, no.
Now,
Disney,
no.
When you go to Mickey Mouse with a request like that, he's like, haha, no. I don't think so.
No.
Nice.
What I did catch, I love, well, the show itself is just wonderful. Oh my God. The dancing. First of all, I can't wrap my head around all I want to say, but I'm a fangirl of dance breaks, many dance breaks, and the 11 o'clock number. Those are my jams. So when I get good ones, I like to continue to watch those all the time.
Yeah.
And with Newsies, what I enjoyed was even from the first number, like the first big number that all the guys do together, it just gets better and better as each number, you're introduced to each number. That's the way I look at it.
Totally.
So by the time, you know, King of New York was there, it's like, oh my God, tapping. Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, very happy. And I watched you hooping it. Bless your heart.
Okay, I practiced real hard for that.
You did that.
Okay.
You did that.
I'm not a trained dancer. I'll let you know.
That's what I was going to ask. Had you had any dance training before?
Well, I had some dance training in college. I went to Ithaca College in upstate New York, which is not necessarily known for its dance training. It's more known for its acting training and its singing training. And it did not have a dance audition to get into the school, which was appealing to me because I was like, oh, great. Nothing's holding me back. It prepared me really well. And one moment I can remember, now that I'm just thinking about it, is I had a professor named Adam Pelty, who is a professional actor, dancer, was in a bunch of Broadway shows, and he came to teach for a semester. And we had a one-on-one meeting, and he told me, Ben, I was a sophomore, he said, Ben, you're a dancer. You might not have any like actual formal training, but your spirit, he's like, I can see your spirit, you're a dancer. And it just gave me permission. It opened up my whole world to be like, oh my God, just because I can't do the splits or like remember the combination or like hit the 5, 6, 7, 8 doesn't make me a non-dancer. I can be a dancer if I want to, even if I can't hit the steps. And I like to think that energy carried me through my audition process and through Newsies, just the idea that like, I can do this even if I can't keep up with the boys or even if I'm at a different level, I can still identify as someone who expresses through movement.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it did show, in particular, the in Seize the Day, in the moment where you and Jeremy have your little, you know, cross back step turnaround thing, you know, the intent and the emotion and, you know, the strength of your movements. Totally sold it. So
And that's we have to give a hand to Christopher Catelli for that, because he's the kind of choreographer that, like, every single move you make, you're like, why am I moving my arm like this? Well, he's like, well, because a long time ago this happened, and here's the backstory, and the reason we're doing this is because it mimics this shape and X, Y, and Z, and he's got a story for everything. Wow. So it's in the same way, like, when you get a great script and you just take the words off the page and they just come alive. Same thing with his movements. You know, they were so natural. They made so much sense. Mm-hmm. And so it was easy to tell the story through his movements.
You talked about giving yourself permission to enjoy the process of dance, and funny enough, I was talking to Noelle, and we were discussing how there are certain people who are performers that we watched and we enjoy watching their things, and how the joy of just being, of just doing what you do, comes through. And you are one of those people. There's not very many people in the industry that I have seen. This is just me, and I'm not saying this to belittle anybody else, but what I see, I mean, I can see it in you. Like, you just simply love what you do, and there's joy from it. You know what I mean? Like,
thank you so much.
Any clips that you're welcome. Any clip that I've seen of you singing, you can see there's just joy. There's so many of them in that show that exude that too, which is fantastic. You can tell they love what they do.
Absolutely. You know, I know. Oh, I love the show too. And hearing you say that reminds me of Jeff Calhoun, our director's vision. He was always, from day one, you know, and this speaks to the bows as well. He saw each and every one of the ensemble members as the lead character. The show is called Newsies. Yes. It's not called Jack Kelly.
Right.
Or it's not, you know what I mean? And so, and the way he features them in the bows, every one of the Newsies gets a bow. Yes. And how many shows do you see the ensemble, you know, get to have their own bows and not do it in a line altogether? Mm-hmm. And I think that was so special and really smart of Jeff to inhabit the show that way, from that point of view, that it's, you know, every one of these ensemble members, it's about specificity for each and every one of them. And I carry that message when I go do workshops to different high schools that are doing the show, or I get the opportunity to see regional productions and they want my feedback. You know, it always comes back to, like, every single one of us needs to be telling the story within our own story.
Right.
You know,
right.
And Stephanie, it's exactly right. It's like, you should be able to zoom in at any moment and know exactly what's going on with each and every one of those people. And I think that show, did that really well because of Jeff's vision that the show was called Newsies and all those boys were collectively the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
It totally shows.
It definitely shows. I do want to, there's some stuff that I do want to talk about Newsies a little bit later, but before we get really going into stuff into Big River and into all of the other things that we want to talk to you about, I just want to know a little bit about your journey into the arts. Was this something that you thought as a kid, hey, I really want to do that? Or was it something that you fell into or, you know?
Well, a little bit of both. I fell into it because my mom put me in a theater camp when I was probably 10, around 10 years old, maybe a year. Yeah, the best thing that ever happened to me, I guess. And I, you know, and this is going to tie into what you were talking about earlier, Stephanie, this idea that I love what I do, which is very true. And it made me think of, you know, the reason why I love what I do. Why do I feel comfortable on stage? And so I think about my childhood of being a young kid. I'm a product of divorce. My parents were divorced at a very young age when I was 5 years old. I was actually born in Zurich, Switzerland. And we moved, my mother and me and my older brother moved to Ohio when I was 5 years old and started a new life. And I think when I got to theater camp and we put on productions, I think we put on a production of, wait for it, Newsies, which was like you know,
the
like
illegal
the counselors,
production.
The illegal production, like before the license was out. That's how people did Newsies when they wanted to do it. Yep. So
that's right.
We also did Joseph and we did Damn Yankees and a bunch of other stuff. But it was, I think, one of the first times I can remember feeling like really like part of a community and feeling accepted and not feeling like I was an outsider. Of course, this didn't register at the time. This is totally like hindsight. Looking back at my childhood going, I think being on stage, the reason it felt so good was in one way, it was an escape. You know, in my normal life, if I wasn't able to feel all the emotions that, a young child feels as they're growing, somehow being on stage and being in front of people, I was free to feel. And I was free to express and scream and cry and like sing and do and move my body. Whereas, you know, in my day-to-day life, maybe I didn't feel that freedom. And so being on stage became not only an escape, but like a safe haven, you know? I guess maybe they're one and the same. And I think what you're talking about, which is such a nice thing to hear, Stephanie, that you can just, certain performers, it just emanates out them, that they love being in that place. I think that comes from a genuine, true, like deep down young Ben place of like, this is where I'm safe. This is where I belong. And like, this is where I've always wanted to be and where I've always just felt it in my bones that I belong. So I fell in at a young age and I knew once the bug bit me, once I was like, oh my gosh, me and all my friends get to work hard to make this one thing that exists in this one moment only. And then it's over. And then all we have are the memories. I was like, I got to chase that feeling. I need more of that. Not to mention, I wanted to be a source for other kids like me who are coming to the theater as audience members. You know, that was also an escape for me, was going to see the national tours and just being like, wow, look at this multi-million dollar production. And like, you know, I was just enthralled. I was asking like any professional actor in my life, I was asking them about the union and like how to join the union. What are all the rules and like, how does it work? And I was just obsessed with it. And, yeah, so that's what I was thinking of when you were saying that it's sort of like you can tell a performer is home when it sort of emanates out of them. And I think that's where that comes from for me. And as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be an actor. It's never been a question. I think I'm lucky in that way. I didn't go to high school with a lot of kids who knew exactly what they wanted to do. I think that's kind of atypical. For me, I didn't see any other interest. I mean, like I had just had no other interest, which is like all at once really great because you're focusing all your energy in one way. But in another way, you know, I would have, you know, in hindsight, like to see myself branch out maybe a little bit more, get involved with some different activities. But that's me speaking as an adult, you know. But yeah, I fell in about around the age of 10 and never ever looked back. I mean, it was one of those things that I like told myself I knew I was going to be on Broadway. I didn't know how or when. Maybe when I was an adult, maybe soon after college, I didn't really care, actually. It was like, I know this is in the cards for me, and I'm not in a rush, and I'm here for the long haul. And, you know, that felt very easy to be my narrative. That didn't feel like a forced narrative for me. It just sort of existed. And I think I consider myself really lucky to have that be something that exists for me and to not have to struggle with what I want to do. Now, let me just also say, it doesn't mean that I don't have really hard times when it comes to acting and, you know, working through imposter syndrome and working through challenges when I feel like a role or an audition is beyond my skill set and feeling like, oh God, why did I ever do this in the beginning? You know, in the first place, of course I go through that. We all go through that. But, you know, I guess what it comes back to is what you were saying, Stephanie, is like, at the very, even if I do the worst job imaginable, if I completely forget my lines, if I completely misinterpret the scene, I know that at the end of the day, like there's something that emanates from my heart that I don't really have a lot of control over that is just like, this is where I belong. And like, if there's one thing that can soothe me through those moments of insecurity, it's that. It's like, just being here is enough. You know, just existing right here in this moment is enough, even if I'm failing at something else.
The love for theater and for doing shows and for being on shows being in New York and being on Broadway, like I've talked with Lance actually about doing a show in New York, and he's like, why do you feel the need to do a show in New York? I'm like, that's actually an interesting question. I'm gonna have to think about that, because loving what you do, it doesn't matter at where you are. That this is the thing that I do the best. Mm-hmm. And it's the thing that I love the most, which is, yeah, you know, kind of the reasoning behind us starting this podcast. Stephanie and I would sit and annoy everybody in our university, because we would sit in the halls and we would sing songs from Fame, and we would talk about theater. We were in the theater department, but it was just nonstop for us.
Nonstop, yeah, nonstop. Absolutely. I totally know that feeling. Ugh.
Yeah.
And you know, hearing you say that, this idea of like, what? Oh, joy. It is just unbridled joy. Why do we need to do a show in New York? Well, that makes me think of, well, you know, from a young age, we know Broadway is like this pinnacle of like this shining lights, and it represents so much. And so there's a lot tied up in that.
Yeah.
But when I have to just say, hearing you say that, Noelle, makes me remember that some of my most favorite theatrical experience have happened on the regional circuit. Broadway is obviously a magical and amazing, but it's very grueling and hard. And you know, you're performing for all these tourists. Mm-hmm. When you go do a regional show, you feel that theater and the community are so much more intrinsically connected than Broadway, where people are just coming in and out, really just seeing the show, seeing the spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you get in the depths of the community, and not to jump anything, but Stephanie, that's how I felt for when I did Big River and some other regional productions. It's like, this matters. This kind of theater matters, because this is for the people that live here, that need theater as an escape, as a healing, as an empathy magnifier.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's what I just want to say is like, Broadway, of course, is amazing. But if I never did another show on Broadway again, I would be okay with that, because as long as I can go and get in front of people and communicate, like, that's what's at the heart of it. Mm-hmm. For us. And there is a lot of tied up into like having a dream and being on Broadway and feeling, yes, like, you know, especially like we grew up in a capitalist environment where it feels like you need to just get to the top,
the
no
top,
matter what.
Top or of the bucket list, right, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like be the best. And like what is that,
yeah,
actually, when you examine it? So, yeah, so I think to your point, there is just as much, if not way more merit in putting up shows in local places where the community gets to experience that as part of their community. You know what I mean?
Going back to this one, this has to be like a fan made clip on YouTube, because it was like 6 minutes of Ben Fankhauser being Ben Fankhauser, something like that. Anyway, something like that. I don't know, but and it was really sweet, because I'm like, fans are so cute, which is where I got Beyonce from, because
Beyonce,
because they were talking, I think it was Andrew
Keenan-Bolger,
yes, talking about the first time you two met and the first time he actually heard you riff or something, and your discussion about Beyonce, something like
that's
that.
That's exactly right. Oh my God, it's flashing back to me. It was the first time we met. It was, I think, like our very first rehearsal of Newsies ever, like, mm-hmm, at Paper Mill Playhouse. And I had tickets for Beyonce's 4 concert at the no longer Roseland Ballroom, which had been since turned into an apartment building. But
God.
My God, that concert was amazing. And she was pregnant. She had just been pregnant, but no one knew it yet. And and she did, yeah. And it was, I think I had tickets for the concert that weekend, and we started rehearsals on like a Thursday or Friday, or maybe we started on a Monday, and it was like, what did you do this weekend? And I was like, I went to see Beyonce, or something like that. And it was like all I could talk about, obviously, because it was so, she's just the queen. She's amazing.
You're obsessed. Yeah. It's okay.
I'm obsessed.
You're obsessed.
So, okay. Hence, Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Beyonce. Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. So I was like, let me pin that one down. All right. There's another clip, because these are all clips put together. Of you and the woman that played Netta singing a song, but I don't know what song that was, but it was awfully gorgeous. I don't know where it was from, but it was like,
I think
sing the whole thing.
Yes, I think I know what you're talking about. I think that's LaVon Fisher-Wilson, who was playing Meta in Newsies. Yes. And she came up to my dressing room. I think it was one of the last few weeks that she was there, and she was doing some vlogging and documenting her time. And I think I was pretty known for, like, just constantly vocalizing backstage, like singing, just like singing along with the show, mainly because I had some decent offstage time, so I could hang in the dressing room. Yeah. And like hear the song over the loudspeaker. And one day we were just riffing back and forth, and we like did like this real like soul R&B version of the song, which really spoke to me and went really popular.
Yeah, that was really,
on the internet.
Can we have some more of that, please?
I know, right?
Because the riff, like one of the riffs, one of the many riffs that you did, you almost snatched my whole hair off.
Oh God.
And I was like, wait, I had to rewind it. I was like, I'm sorry, I don't think I heard that right. Let me go back. And you did it again. I was like, oh yeah, I did hear
one.
That.
Okay. I know what you're talking about. I must have been really feeling it that day.
You were feeling it because even she was like,
I know. that was off the cuff. That was not, I mean, a lot of these videos, you know, there's at least like a, okay, let's do this and let's end it like this and let's just go.
Right.
That was a completely like, let's just like, cause I had did that all the time and every day, just wandering backstage being like, like whatever, you know? So.
Mm-mm. Yep. Amazing. Well, amazing.
Those were the couple of things that I remember watching in that I really liked. But yes, we do want to talk about the riffing because again, okay, so I said before, I'm trying to figure out how to put it together to make it make sense. And I'm going back to like my children's theater days when I was talking to kids and telling them how to, you know, work things out. The beauty of your voice to me is the fluidity of it. When you go into the higher registers, it doesn't take away, or it doesn't sound different than the coloring that you have in your lower register. I mean, it's just smooth, nothing, you know, it's just lovely on the ear. That's
thank you.
And I keep saying that, and I'm sure people are going to say, oh, she's buttering him up. Yes. Yes, I am. Why?
Thank you. Well, that's the goal, isn't it? To get to be fluid throughout and to be able to.
Well, yes, but I'm not even there. I know I'm not there. I'm not alone.
Right. I you know, it's funny. I've been like riffing and singing. Like, I think my favorite music growing up, because my mom played it all the time, was Motown and R&B, and I listened to a lot of Usher too. And those. That was the sound I had in my ear. And gospel music. I found gospel music at a really young age. In fact, there was one, when I was in sixth grade, I was doing a production of Joseph at my temple with the temple players or whatever. And there was a space in the building that we were in that had a Sunday morning Baptist service with incredible music. And I like heard it from a distance, and it was like a moth to a flame, and was like, what? And I was just like, I felt it, and I really felt it. And so that was another influence of mine. And to this day, like, so that's mostly I listen to gospel. Like, it makes me feel good. It makes me feel connected. It, not to mention the musicality, the musicianship of these, you know, and we hear then extend into jazz, and then into pop as well. And I'm a piano player, so I know my scales, and I mean, I'm not like any kind of jazzer or anything like that, but I know my fair share of scales, and I think that helps when you're talking about musicality, like the way I sing, you know, I sort of almost see it in front of me as if it's sheet music. Like I know the scale, like it's in my muscle memory. So I have the freedom to improvise like that because I've studied, I guess when I was younger, I just memorized the scales. I think that's like where you start with something like that. But yeah, gospel music, R&B for sure, huge influences, Motown as well. And also I will say, I realized at a young age that if I couldn't hit a note, or if I couldn't hold a note for a long time, I could just do something kind of fancy around it and still be like impressive or feel like I reached the pinnacle of that moment without having to like deal with my shortcoming.
Right.
So there's that too. I mean, if we're being honest, and you know, now nice that I cover. Say that out loud, yeah, you know, it makes me think, you know, like when I think about my actual like an anatomical, like when I look at my vocal cords in a, with a microscope, I have like very thin, long vocal cords, and everybody's different, you know? So I don't do so well at like belting big high notes. Sure, I do it, but like, it's not so easy for me as it is to be fluid and quick. I think because they're stretched thin and they're long. And other people that have shorter, thicker chords can make louder sounds and sing way higher. So everyone's different in that way. And I think for me, it was just about realizing, oh, I guess I can do this really well. And it seems to be pleasing and it pleases me. And you know, maybe this is a tool.
Yes.
It's an excellent tool.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, no, great. Just beautiful. I watched you guys all on Stars in the House with Seth and James, the Newsies reunion.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about that riff that you would do over and over and over and over and over again in the dressing room, that yeah. clip with Andrew, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I'm not a riffer. I try really hard. Like I will watch a lot of breaking down the riffs and, you know, I can kind of learn them, but it definitely doesn't come naturally to me. And when I am presented with a song that requires a little bit of that, like I struggle. And but what I was watching that Stars in the House with my mom again, with my 85-year-old mom, and I started trying to mimic you doing that riff, which I can't it was like a whole 2 weeks ago and I can't even remember it anymore, but and one of my cats, I'm a cat lady, one of my cats jumped up on my lap as I was singing it and started just like purring and cuddling me, and then I would stop singing and she would jump down, and then I would start the riff again and she would took a video of my
That's
cat
so
Riley
funny.
Because I would do the riff and she would sit and then I would stop singing and she would jump down and walk away. And the second I
started, oh my gosh.
And she doesn't particularly like it when I practice in the house. Like she doesn't like noises. And you know, if I'm singing too loudly, she'll go into another room. You know, I try not to take it personally, but
everyone's a critic.
So she is equally as obsessed with your riffing.
Oh my gosh. Riley is a fan of the pentatonic scale. Who isn't? I like
Go
that.
Oh, Riley.
So, Big River. First of all, I have a huge long history with that show. Absolutely love it. It's kind of a love-hate kind of thing with that show for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But Roger Miller was a singer-songwriter, and he had a big hit in the late 60s, early 70s called King of the Road. That Roger Miller. So if you're my age and around that time when Puff and Stuff and HR, you know, and the Boogaloos were on TV, you'll know what I'm talking about. thank you. And so Roger Miller wrote the music for this show. And it's the music for the show is amazing. If you don't know what Big River is, it is the story, it's musical telling of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. The music in that show just, it's almost otherworldly how beautiful it is. When did you do Big River? Was that during your...
I did Big River in, I believe, 2014? Either 14 or 15.
Huck?
Yes. Okay. One of my favorite roles. And my gym was Philip Boykin, the great Tony nominee, Philip Boykin.
Wow.
Who was amazing. And it was directed by Michael Heisman. And it was done at Sacramento Music Circus.
Music Circus.
Which is an incredible theater in the round. And it holds like 3,000 people. But because it's in the round, even the last row is quite close to the stage, because so doing that show in the round was another element. You know, doing any show in the round is so special because A, there's no hiding, you know, and B, as an audience member, being able to see other audience members on the other side of the fourth wall threw me into the world like I'd never been in as an audience member, because, you know, we have the fourth wall and we're sitting in the audience, there's the wall, and then there's the play. And now that it's all around us, it was like, oh boy, it was really amazing. And I, when you say River in the Rain, we had this turntable that just went ever so slowly, and we had all this fog on the stage, and it was just this young boy and his friend that were on the run from society, trying to make a world for themselves that felt right, and just a snippet of their moment in time when they're just basking in the glow of nature and, you know, and asking big questions about life, being under the stars. I mean, it's just one of those magical theatrical moments.
One of my favorite moments in that show.
Something great, and I know you both know about this, is about being an educator and a teacher, is giving that sense of permission over to the next generation. That we all, it's so funny that we as humans sometimes feel like we need permission in order to stretch our comfort zone in a way. I'm still kind of working through that, you know, but like, what is that? And to be able to give that back to younger kids and give that sense of permission, and I believe in you, and you have more talent than you even know, is like so special. And the other reason I love educating as well, piggybacking off that, is because theater is really passed down. You can't really read it in a textbook. I mean, sure, there are textbooks about it, but it's something that you do, you learn on the job with experience, you learn with each show you do, and it's something that you're passed down stories from the older generation.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this art form is continued. It's being passed down, and I love that.
And I think that we all remember that one teacher as well, be it in elementary school drama or junior high school drama or high school drama or college drama, or a director that we worked with. Our senior production, my senior production, we did Working. And I thought, there's no way that I'm going to get a solo song. Like, and I had been in choir and show choir, glee, and all these things, but I never got the solos. You know, I was always in the ensemble, and I was always. And she gave me, the song that she gave me in Working was Millwork, which I don't know if you're familiar with that show, but it's written by James Taylor. And it is honestly the best song in the show. And when I watched the grainy, horrible VHS video of that production, and I look at myself, I think it's the first time in my life that I was standing up straight.
Oh, my.
You know, like, I look at the video of myself doing that still 150 years later, and it's because of her. It's because of Debbie Grebe, because she was instrumental in what I'm still doing. And how I teach the kids that I work with.
Yeah.
The support that she gave was something that I try to pass on to the kids that I work with.
You know, I love that.
So, yeah.
Love that. Yeah, it's really, thank God for our teachers. It's some of the best, it's some of the most noble work you can do. And it's, you know, like you said, everyone remembers an influential teacher, and they give us so much, and especially our theater teachers. You know, theater for kids is, I think it should be mandatory. It's like, it's ways to work through emotions. It's way to understand human behavior. It's ways to empathize with other people's situations. It's ways to escape. It's ways to feel better about your own circumstance. So I love all that. And to hear you say, like, the first time I stood up straight, it's like, oh my gosh. Like,
right?
And I was, you know, like, and I was like 17 years old. I was a senior in high school, you know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and theater demands that we're seen. And sometimes that's a really scary thing, to be seen and to be heard. And sometimes that's all we want, is to be seen and to be heard. So I think it's good for everybody in that way. I love that story. Wow.
Thank you. I have a kind of a piggyback off it, but not with a teacher, with a director. Like, with you, it was a director telling you that you were a dancer, correct? Yeah.
It was a teacher in college.
It was a teacher. Yeah. I work with a director here that she directs all of my shows that I produce. We have a little, it's like, it's my company, but it's the same team. It's always the same music director, and it's always the same director. After we did Hair, I said, do you guys know Hedwig and the Angry Inch? Yitzhak is not a part that it's not for me. It's not a part that I think that I can play or that I can do justice to. If I could spend the rest of my life playing Yitzhak, I would be perfectly happy to play that role forever. It was my best, I think it's my best time doing a show. It's my best, the proudest I've ever been of myself doing a show.
That's
we toured,
right.
We toured all over Canada with it last summer. Like, it just kind of became this bigger thing that I didn't expect. So, yeah.
You know what else I love about that, Noelle, is that, like, theater is not a solo sport. Like, we need our coaches, our artistic directors, our people around us to see the things that we cannot. And the same, and we provide the same thing to those people. And that's like, you can't do a show by yourself. Sure, we do the solo show and then you see one person, or Hedwig where there's two people, but like, how many people went in to the making of that? And that's the other thing I love about theater. You can't do it alone. You need
people. You
can't
do it alone. Yeah. I'm glad we talked about teaching and educating, because I did have that on my list of things to discuss with you. I do want to kind of swing back a little bit to the national tours that you've done, because you did Spring Awakening, and you did Beautiful.
Yes.
You know, there are certain actors that thrive on the road, and there are certain actors that like to stay in one place. Like, I'm a person that I like to stay in. I'd rather just stay here. The touring was fun, but it's hard. It's grueling. It's exhausting. Your day off. You're traveling. What is touring like for you?
You summed it up pretty nicely. I'm an adventurer, so I love the adventure. I love doing a road trip on the day off instead of taking a plane to, you know, I'll be happy to drive 14 hours with a friend and rent a big SUV and, you know, take all our luggage and take the long way. I'm someone who, I spoke a little bit about this earlier, but I love to bring theater to the locals. I love the idea of bringing Broadway to you know, the middle of Michigan, or to Kansas, or some places where people might not get out to see Broadway, and bringing that to them. So I love the idea of bringing something special to the locals. I love the idea of, you know, I eating all kinds of different cuisine. And so I'm a big adventurer. I love that aspect of it. Now, that's not to say that I didn't find it quite grueling and I didn't get homesick, because I did. You're away from home. In fact, not only are you away from home, you don't have a home. Like, you have a hotel room that you call home for 3 weeks in one hotel room or longer. I mean, I've stayed in hotel rooms for, I've probably stayed in a hotel room for probably like 8 weeks or even more, you know, a room, just a little thing. But you know, when I did Beautiful in 2016 and 17, Airbnb was a thing, where it wasn't. When I did Spring Awakening 2009, it was not a thing yet, really. And so I got a chance to stay in some amazing properties and really live like a local, which is very appealing to me, and have a kitchen and a whole house to, you know, live in, which felt like a total pleasure. And yes, the thing about doing a show in New York or at home is you go to work and then you go home. And like, it, you have some sense of normalcy. I'm saying that with air quotes, because just like everyone else, you have a job and then you have a home life. And on tour, that the line gets blurred so severely that the show becomes your life and your life becomes your work. Because you're living out in the middle of nowhere, you know, following the bus, going wherever the show goes, and you have no sense of, like, I'm off the clock now. Because you're with the same people after hours as well as during work hours. You know, if you want to go get a drink with friends, well, your friends are the people in the show. So there's not a lot of separation of church and state in that way. And you know, the other thing that's challenging is, you know, you get to a new city on Monday night and it's dark and you're disoriented and you don't know the lay of the land. And then the next afternoon you're in for sound check and you're just like, where am I? So yes, it's a tough gig. If I had a preference, I mean, I would definitely hit the road again for sure, depending on the role and depending on some other factors for me in my life at this point. But you know, I recommend it. It's really fun, and I personally really like the idea now that I'm getting older of like having a job and then going home. I also love the idea of an adventure, but that's what appeals to me most these days. But again, theater is one of those things, again, as especially as an actor, where you do need this some sense of permission in that I need someone to hire me in order to do my work, which is one of the sort of ugly things about the profession. One of the things that I have a hard time with is because it's hard to wait for permission. It's hard to audition for 100 things and have one person give you a job. You know, like I think there have been stretches of times where I've auditioned for 30 to 40 projects and gotten one of them, you know? And it's a little, when you look at this, the data, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm completely just at the whim of these producers. And so that when you do get a job on the road, it's like, oh my God, I got a job, I gotta go, no matter what. And so right. It's hard as an actor to like sort of be able to pick and choose. But yeah, I would probably go out there again. And did I cover like the road life? Yeah, the road life is fun, man. It's a party. You're getting paid, you know, you have no living expenses basically. And you're bringing something amazing to these towns and they love you for it. Like both shows I've done on the road, Spring Awakening spoke so loudly to young people and even their parents too. And it was something so radical. You know, when that show came out in 2007, people were just like, had never seen anything like it.
Right.
Singing in microphones like this, the juxtaposition between that sort of like old, like legit text and that sort of like rock inner thoughts, rock music, was just mind blowing. And so it was like a rock concert every night. And then going to on the road with Beautiful, which is a show that appeals to the baby boomers, people that grew up with Carole King. It was like a rock concert in a different way. Obviously there was not a lot of screaming, but after the show, there was some real, you know, people that were in their 60s coming up, taking me by the shoulders going, you don't understand. Like, you helped me relive my college days in these last 2 hours. And I can't even tell you like what that was like. And that's just the best thing in the world. I mean, that's why I go to the theater, to experience that nostalgia and that sense of like just profound humanity. And so to be able to like feel like I was a part of giving that to someone is like, oh my gosh, that's, I would go to the ends of the earth to give this and to get this feedback. So yeah, those were two really just exceptional shows. And I love, like, I'm someone who loves Les Mis. Les Mis is a great show. But I don't know if I would have gotten that same kind of catharsis doing a show like Phantom, right, or Les Mis, or, you know, a big spectacle or something. I think there was something about Beautiful that spoke to the nostalgia, and about Spring Awakening that spoke to the sort of like coming of age, that felt like, oh my God, I'm so lucky to be telling these specific stories. Because again, as actors, it's like when the job comes, you take it. That job could have been, you know, the Berenstain Bears Live on tour. So, I would have taken it. You know what I mean? Like, so I feel very lucky about that. And yeah, the road is grueling, you know, but it's worth it too.
You are the second person in a row that has brought up the Berenstain Bears. The last person we talked with was Drew Gehling. We talked with Drew last week. And for that thing that he did, that online like murder, whatever, yeah, that thing, the book that he's holding is the Berenstain Bears.
That's so funny.
Like, we talked to him on like what, last Monday or last Friday or something.
That's hilarious.
That's funny.
Oh my
Berenstain
God.
Bears in the house. Berenstain Bears so on funny. Broadway babies.
Okay. Yes.
So I want to ask you, you know, we've been talking a lot about how much theater makes us feel as performers and stuff. And now that we don't have it, how's your quarantine going?
It's going okay. I picked up some writing. I was never really a writer or considered myself a writer, but I have a close friend and now collaborator named Alex Wise, who's also a Broadway actor. Mm-hmm. And of course of the small screen and some of the big screen. And he and I did a show last summer called The Flamingo Kid, which is based on a Gary Marshall movie from, I think, the 80s. Yes. And
Matt Dillon? Matt Dillon.
Yes,
I think.
That was his like breakout.
Matt Dillon.
Yeah, we're Gen Xers, so.
Okay. Yes. Yes. So that was like the Matt, that like the broody Matt Dillon, and so we did an sort of Broadway aimed version of that last summer, and we actually grew up together, doing community theater. Oddly enough.
Oh, awesome.
I know. And we got cast as best friends in the show. And we were like, oh my God. So we actually, in October, once the show ended, you know, I got a phone call from him one day, and it was like, very much of what I'm talking about. It's like, he's like, well, I just got out of a meeting with my agents, and nobody wants to see me, and I can't get in any rooms, and I'm sick and tired of waiting for permission to do my work, and I'm just sick of this, and I want to make something. You want to make something? And I was like, yes, let's make something. So we started writing a musical in October, and we're on our like third draft now. You know, musicals take many years and a long time.
Wow.
Boy, it's hard. But that's how I've been filling my time in quarantine, is I've been sort of making my own work. He and I have been collaborating, like I said, on this musical. We were just working today on a performance for a synagogue for the High Holidays coming up, mm-hmm. Where we arranged a traditional song and we're making a video and stuff like that. At the very beginning of quarantine, I was doing a little breakfast show on my Instagram where I would I love to cook. I would like cook a little meal, sing a couple songs, do a little interaction with the people. And again, I think it comes back to communicating, you know, even though we're on Instagram Live and there's some screen, you know, it's not that same vibe of person to person, just, you know, getting feedback in the form of a comment and being able
hearts.
To take... Or the hearts, love the hearts, love floating hearts.
Love the hearts.
Just getting that feedback and saying like, I hear you, I see you, and I see that you're seeing me and hear me. And that sort of exchange is what, you know, obviously keeps us going. But so that's how I've been filling my time. I'm like, I gotten to see family and my little nephew. And so obviously this time, I think for a lot of people has been one that's like, okay, my job is gone right now. So maybe this is a good time to, you know, quarantine for 2 weeks, visit family, quarantine, come back. So I've been able to do that and, you know, done some reflecting and some teaching on Zoom. Yep. I've always been coaching for a few years, but my coaching business has really, become primary for me in this mm-hmm. time. And, which has been really great. And other than that, I, of course, like miss performing, of course. But I'm not in despair. And I'm hopeful for the future. I know it will come back. I mean, it's something that we, to me, it's so intrinsic. It's so natural, a part of the human condition and the human experience to tell stories, to communicate, to empathize, that I know it will come back. And at the same time, I take comfort in the fact that we are all in the same boat. I do not feel isolated or alone because I know everybody else is feeling what I'm feeling too. And that makes me feel kind of a part of it as well. And so I'm sort of patiently waiting and dabbling and creating my own work, which has been so liberating. Oh my gosh, finishing a draft of your own work, you're like, nobody can tell me what to do. Of course I want notes and like help, but like this is mine. That's mine. And I don't have to share this with the director or my co-stars. And of course, sharing is a big part of theater. And, you know, all good acting comes from, you know, sharing your attention on the other person and have them do the same thing and having that interplay. But man, just creating something from nothing is really liberating. And I've been watching lots of TV. And every time I see a clip of a live show, I cry. Like, it doesn't even matter if it's like a comedy or something, but just seeing it and being like, oh my gosh, remember when we were all sitting in the same room and we all decided silently, no one talked to each other, but we all decided to come into this room for 2 hours all together and to turn our cell phones off and to like watch a story or tell a story. And like, we all decided that we're going to laugh a little louder than we do normally. And we're going to clap our hands together and we're going to give energy to each other. And like, I just when we see those clips, I'm like, oh my God, that's so special. And so quarantine's been all right. It's been okay. Being creators, you know, and this idea of waiting for permission, and instead we need to create today. We need to get the project kicked off now. And the reason I say that, I think about Jonathan Larson.
Yes.
What a prolific and he wrote a song about it, No Day But Today. It's like, what if he would have waited a year? You know what I mean?
Right.
What if you would have said, let me put this off a few months?
Yeah.
So you know, if there's any, exactly, any creatives out there, you know, today is the day.
Yeah.
You know,
don't wait.
Don't wait. Absolutely.
Why wait? I mean, why wait? You have all this time.
Yeah.
You have this time. Yes, it's a little hectic here. It is a little tense. And I know, I mean, I used to, like, if on Facebook, I used to be like, all the time, and Trump and blah, blah, blah. Now I'm like, Trump's over there, but he's not going to steal my joy. So I put put things on there that are uplifting, hopefully, and make people laugh. And I mean, I used to be in that spot where all the worries and all the fear and all of that was, I felt like it was consuming me. Mm-hmm. So when this pandemic hit, something just clicked. Where I was able to kind of reflect and go, okay, how do I see my life? What do I want for my life? What is my purpose? I'm out of breath. What is my purpose? What do I want my purpose to be? What kind of imprint do I want to leave on the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I know it is storytelling. Again, not sure if I'll ever make it to Broadway, but that's okay too, because I have, you know, I can take this.
Hey,
anywhere.
You are Sister Chantel, and nothing's going to top that in my book.
But I didn't do, I wasn't off Broadway. Yeah. I didn't do any of the New York stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Still,
but that's okay.
But you created that role, and that's important.
Which is another thing that I'm grateful for. Not everybody gets that opportunity to create a whole new character like that, like
in a show that connects so strongly with you know, talking about young people and with Spring Awakening.
Yeah.
I mean, Bear connects so much with these kids. I have so many students that they're like, oh, the person you're doing the podcast with, oh my gosh, she was Sister Chantel, she's on the album, I've been listening to her since I was 9 or whatever.
Totally.
You know, it's important that is something that you've left in the, you know, that you've
right.
given to the world. That talking about with social media and Facebook and stuff, it's also given us an opportunity, especially when it pertains to our podcast, to connect with people like Ben. Because I sent him a DM on Instagram. You know, it's like
right on.
When we started off, our first like 8 guests were people that one of us knew, like Lance and Michael Cerveris, I've known since I was a teenager, and Adam Pascale, I've known for like 15 years, you know. So we just hit up like our friends, hey, you want to come on our podcast, you know. And we never intended it to be an interview show. It just kind of evolved into that. And Mark Shaman was the first, he was our 10th guest, and he was the first person that I just sent him a message on Twitter. And he's like, okay, because people are looking for things to do and ways to connect and people to talk with and people to share with and you're our 17th guest.
Hey,
so wow. 17.
Well done, guys. That's for
you
real.
Know
that's
so that in itself is I think we're winning this.
Yes.
And if it weren't to find the joy in it, if it weren't for the pandemic, we wouldn't be here right now with talking.
We really wouldn't.
That's right.
I mean, Noelle and I would be talking, but I mean, you wouldn't be.
But we'd be watching. We'd be screen sharing and watching Newsies.
We would totally be watching.
Totally.
This was me last night watching Newsies again. Get it.
I do that. I don't know about you, but I don't know about you, and I don't know about Ben. I know sometimes when I'm in a show and I'm not on stage during something, or if I'm not
in the wings.
Or you know, at the back of the stage or whatever, when there's a moment that happens in the show that something either plays in my head or something audibly comes out of me, and every time I watch Newsies, every single time.
That's so funny.
In the bows too, because they do it in the bows, and like I gotta do the
footsteps. Okay.
A bunch about that moment. That was like an organic moment. That was not written in there or anything. That was just like collectively just started doing that. Talk about like your ensemble work and like
phenomenal. It's so fun. Yes. My other favorite moment in Newsies, that moment in Once and For All, there's change coming. Oh my God, goosebumps right now. Absolutely. And I'm not even watching you guys. That's like such a magical moment. And all you were doing is standing on that scaffolding. And I'm just like, every single time, it just is so powerful and so beautiful. Prior to doing the show when you were a kid, had you seen the film?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And were you a fan?
Oh, you know what? I think the first time I saw the film was because we were doing the show.
Okay.
So to revise my thing. So I didn't quite know, and it came out in 92, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I had probably done it around like 2000 maybe was the year I did it. So yeah. It was fairly like still a cult hit amongst my counselors who were about 18, 19. So for them, it was really big.
And that is the demographic. Absolutely.
That's right. Yep. So when I found out we were doing Newsies, I was like, oh God, I got to watch this. And I watched it and obviously loved it. It was awesome. And I was crutchy.
You were crutchy. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. I remember, I remember going to see that movie in the movie theater, and I was not like 13 or whatever. But I may have been the only person, or maybe I went with somebody, and we were the only people in theater because it wasn't a hit in the movie theater. Like nobody saw it, people made fun of it. Like people really made fun of it, and I mean, we all know that Christian Bale, like for a long time, would like, nope, I'm not gonna ever sing again. I'm like, but dude, you on the horse with your arms back singing Santa Fe is beautiful.
Absolutely.
You know, so when it became, you know, when I still have my VHS copy. I also have it on Blu-ray, but I still have my VHS copy. And I mean, it's probably worn out. Just the idea that movie musicals were being made again. Because
that was
they hadn't, they, you know, it had all become kind of like what it, maybe Disney animated stuff, or I don't even know what was happening, but it certainly wasn't movie musicals. So to see that being made and being made with people like Bill Pullman was in it. I mean, come on,
right.
You know, so it was a big deal to me, like as an older fan of it, and I did see it so completely as a stage musical. And so when it did finally become a stage musical, like that was a really big deal. And then that it was a show that and I believe I heard you talking about this with Lance on Broadway's Calling, that it you know, it was like a short run, right? It wasn't, because I remember going to see it, but it wasn't supposed to have an open ended run.
That's right.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. This is some of my favorite sort of like overall memories of the process of that time in my life. You know, it was a nice solid 4 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And it was so pleasurable because it had so little expectation. When it first came to Paper Mill, it was just that. It was a regional production that maybe they could figure out how to license so that they could actually give a version to all these kids all over the world, probably, that wanted to do the stage version of this musical. And so I was happy to just have 4 weeks of work. I was happy to, you know, do the real stage version of the beloved movie. I was just happy to be there. And then once we had this crazy successful run at Paper Mill Playhouse, you know, people were just flocking from the tri-state area and beyond to come to New Jersey to see Newsies. And so it was like, oh my gosh, this is like really special. People love it. And of course there was chattering like, oh my God, do you think we'd go to Broadway? I don't know. But it was never this pressure of like, gosh, I hope we're good enough to go to Broadway. Right. It never had that kind of energy. And I've done some shows, you know, after Newsies that have like, oh God, I know this has its eye on Broadway, so if we can just get this right, then we can go, you know, and there's just so much pressure there. And with Newsies, it was just so joyous. We were just so happy to be there for that one performance, and then the next performance, and then the next week, and then our final week. And then we got a spot on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, And it wasn't until a few weeks before that broadcast that we found out that the whole reason that we were going to be on the broadcast was because it was a commercial for the Broadway production that was going to be 12 weeks in the summer. And it was like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, I can't even tell you, like, fulfilled is like, in the genuine sense of the word, when you look it up in the dictionary, fulfilled, like the completion of a dream, or like the sense of just being like, just fulfilled. And it was just a very special time. And again, I think it was made special because I was young. I had just, you know, I hadn't really had my big break, so to speak. And it was just this thing that I didn't see coming. And right. And it was so exciting in that way. And my friend tells a story. So when I was in my senior year at Ithaca, they were just beginning to cast the show. And they sent out casting notices to all the colleges. We're looking for young dancers and young talent to populate this world. And this doesn't sound like me, but I tell it anyway because it's a cool story. My friend claims that in the hallway we were chatting and walking, and I pointed to the flyer and I went, I'm going to be in that. And it doesn't sound like me because I don't like to put my eggs, like all my eggs in one basket. But if she was telling the truth and I did do that, that's a pretty cool like manifestation. And a part of it did feel very full circle for me because it was like one of the first musicals I ever knew about when I was 10 years old, and one of the first times I was on stage, and just it's a beloved movie, and some of the songs and the Alan Menken score and the Jack Feldman lyrics, and yeah, it just makes me so happy to think about. I mean, I really feel so lucky and blessed to have fallen into that, and I do mean that because yes, I do believe I earned my way up into that company. I did a great audition and all that stuff, but part of it was the timing, and part of it is like the way I look and who I am in that moment and that one day that they were casting, all the other factors. You know, it's not lost on me that there was a lot of moving parts that had to happen for me to be able to fall into this situation. And boy, am I glad I did. It's surreal to think about. When I do, it's like, I am so lucky. And it gave me like access to a small fan base that I feel like are people that are hungry for my work. And there are people that want to hear my work and my songs and my voice. And that's like all I've ever wanted since I was a little kid. And so it's sort of majestic and bigger than I can even comprehend, and sort of existential at the same time. And, yeah, so basically that road for Newsies was unexpected, and it was as unexpected as we all say it was. It was like the little engine that could. We did not know it was going to be this thing, and then it just was. And then that 12-week run sold out like that, and they opened us up to an open-ended run, and it was like, oh my gosh. And then they sent the thing on the road, and then they made a movie out of it, and then like it was
and they
just
brought
like,
and they brought you guys back. You yeah. and Jeremy and Kara and Andrew, like back yeah. to the show, which yeah. to me was so smart. It was so smart because you are who I wanted to see. I mean, not to take away from any of the people who were in that tour, which was mm-hmm. what, at the Pantages, I think. Mm-hmm. Not to take away from any of those people, but because I had loved this movie so much and you were the cast that I saw when I saw it mm-hmm. on Broadway, mm-hmm. you are who I wanted to own on a DVD
sure,
or Disney
yeah.
Plus or whatever in my living room, because it brought yeah. back to like what we were talking about earlier of that like magical moment of being in that theater. And that's who I wanted to see was yeah. was you and right. Jeremy and Kara and Andrew. And now I can watch it whenever I want. And
that's right.
I watched it on my birthday. I'll have you know, July 29th. I watched Newsies with a friend
Yay.
On Zoom. For my birthday.
I love that. I really love that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's yeah. wonderful. I think it's, I'm so glad it's preserved for people to enjoy it for many, many years to come. Because I know it brought me joy when I was a kid. It brought me joy when I was an adult. And I hear people every day tell me that it brings them joy. And that's, I can't believe how lucky I am to be a part of something that brings people joy every day. I really can't even tell you. It's so cool.
So we've been talking with Ben Fankhauser. Thank you so much for being on our show.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben. It's been so great chatting with you.
Likewise. This has been really fun. Thanks, guys.
All right, and thank you everyone out there for listening to yet another episode of Broadway Babies. I'm Stephanie Anderson.
And I'm Noelle Hannibal. We'll see you next time.
All right, bye.
Bye.